On an ordinary day like this, you may receive the greatest gift you will ever know. And on an ordinary day like this, you may be hit by a storm that will rock your world. On an ordinary day like this, you may be enjoying life and family and friends. And then you receive a phone call. Or someone tells you some news that turns your world upside down, and you feel like you've just been sucker punched. Loss. Every one of us experiences suffering and pain and loss at some point in our life. Storms have a way of coming into everyone's life, and I would bet that every one of us here, if you could share your story, could share times in your life when your life has been rocked by the storm of loss. And as we think about that this morning and begin this theme and talk about this today, I want to say that it is important for us to know that loss and suffering and evil are not God's invention. The Bible tells us that God is not the author of evil. God did not create evil in our world. Rather, they are the result of sin having come into the world. And we see that in Genesis 3, right? God creates a perfect world. He creates perfect people. He creates a world of total and absolute perfection and good. He creates it all, and he says, this is good. And then he creates mankind, and he says, this is very good. And yet, people choose, because God creates us with free will, people choose to turn against God at that initial time back in Genesis 3. And as a result, suffering and death comes into the world. But the good news that will give us hope as we talk about this morning is that we can know that someday God is going to redeem our loss. Someday God is going to make things right. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but someday that day is coming when God is going to set things right. And the end of the Bible tells us that loss, suffering, death, evil is not the end of the story. What we see going on in Palestine today, what we see going on in our world today, what's going on in our country today, what went on in that restaurant where that student was shot last night and killed, that is not the end of the story. Because we see from Revelation 21 these words, and look at them as they come up on the screen behind me, where the writer, the Apostle John, says in this vision, "Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the old heaven and the old earth had disappeared, and the sea was also gone." And I used to read that word, those words, "the sea was also gone." And I used to say, why? I love the ocean. That's my favorite place in all the world. Take me to the ocean way more than even the mountains. But do we understand that in that day, in John's day, the sea was seen as the abyss? The bottom of the sea was seen as the gates of Hades. The gates of hell were at the bottom of the sea, which is why it's so interesting to me that Jesus chooses fishermen to be his disciples. And there's a reason for that. It's because they were courageous. You didn't have a lot of people going out onto the Sea of Galilee and onto the lakes and onto the waters in that day because people saw the sea as the beginning of the abyss. And so John is giving this picture of a perfect place coming back together again, where there's no more evil, no more hate. The gates of hell are done. And he says, "I saw the holy city, a new Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven like a bride beautifully dressed for her husband. And I heard a loud shout from the throne saying, 'Look, God's home is now among his people. He will live with them and they will be his people and God himself will be with them. And then he will wipe away every tear from their eyes. And there'll be no more death or sorrow or crying or pain. All these things are gone forever.' And the one sitting on the throne said, 'Look, I'm making everything new.' And then he said to me, 'Write this down, for what I tell you is trustworthy and true.' And he also said, 'It is finished. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To all who are thirsty, I will give freely from the springs of the water of life. And all who are victorious will inherit all these blessings, and I will be their God, and they will be my children.'" You see, if things are not set right in this life, in the end they will, and we can count on that. We can depend on that. We can bet our life on that. But until then, what do we do with the here and now? Until then, what do we do when our world is rocked by storms of loss? Well, until that day, then you and I've got to find a way to be able to live in this life with its suffering, with its pain, with its loss, because sooner or later, something is going to happen that is going to hit our life. We love somebody and they die. Or maybe they hurt us and the relationship dies. For some of you, the storm in your life has been the family that you grew up in and you were deeply wounded. For some, it's a marriage that has not turned out to be what you had hoped for. Or maybe a marriage that has ended in enormous pain. For some of you, it's life has turned out to be disappointing. Or you had a dream and that dream turned into a nightmare. Or maybe you've gone to the doctor and they give you bad news, and this life and health that maybe you had taken for granted is suddenly threatened. If the storm of pain and suffering and loss has not hit you yet, can I say to you, hang on, it will. It will, guaranteed. Jesus says in John 16:33, in this world you'll have trouble. In this world, you will have trouble. The storms of trouble in life are going to hit everybody as we walk through this troubled world. And when it hits, what do we ask ourselves sometimes? So many of us ask that question, why me? Why me? Why am I going through this? And you know, as I've thought about my own life and some of the suffering that I've gone through, some of the trials and the tribulations and the struggles I've gone through, I realize that suffering comes into our life for a couple different reasons. One of those reasons may be that there are times we do bring suffering on ourselves because of something we've done, something that we are responsible for. I mean, think about it. Overeat enough, smoke enough, drink enough alcohol, sit around long enough without exercise, and you're likely going to have some health problems that may lead to an early death. If you're an abusive person, you may very likely end up being lonely at the end. Commit a sexual sin, an emotional and physical affair. Don't do what we need to do to keep our marriage thriving and alive. And there are going to be moments where we will experience pain and loss in that relationship. Sometimes you and I bring suffering on ourselves. But can I say, as I've lived life, I've realized that some of the deepest heartbreak, some of the deepest loss involves suffering that comes really for no apparent reason. And when it does, we realize that life on this planet Earth is incredibly fragile, even for some of the smartest and strongest amongst us. We discover what the writer of Scripture said a number of years ago, so many years ago, and it still holds true today. As Isaiah 40, Isaiah writes, a voice says, cry out. And I said, what shall I cry out? And the answer came back, all flesh is like grass, and the days are like the flowering field, and the wind blows over them, and they're gone. And in an instant, life is fragile. You know, when grass is standing there and it's been watered and it seems so strong and it seems like, you know, it's so well rooted. But then comes along the drought or comes along a frost or the blade of a lawnmower and it's gone. And life is like that sometimes, doesn't it? Life can be pretty dry at times. Life can be pretty cold at times. Life can cut us down. And in a moment, it is gone. And you know, we tend to think in our culture, especially our Western American culture, that we're in control. Can I say we're not? We are not. There's a writer by the name of Jerry Sitzer. And Jerry wrote a book called The Grace Disguised, How the Soul Grows Through Loss. And what his experience was that one day he left his home with his family in his car. And as they were driving down the street, a drunk driver came along and plowed into them head on. And in an instant, he lost his mother, his wife, and his daughter. Three generations gone in a moment through no fault of his own. And what he did in the midst of that severe loss is what a lot of us at times might do. You know, what if I'd left 10 seconds earlier? What if I'd left 10 seconds later? What if I'd taken another route? How can such a horrible loss come in what seems like such a random event? And what he discovered and what he writes about in his book is that sometimes we just are not going to know the answer why. Sometimes there are no answers why to what happens at times in life. And it's what I've realized. With Vanessa and her dad being in a car crash that took his life at age 47. Or my sister and her son dying in that plane crash in Sioux City, Iowa back in 1989. Or cancer taking my mom at too young an age, breast cancer. And she never smoked a day in her life. She never drank. She never abused her body. And the cancer took her at too young an age. We live in a fallen world, and there are times when things just don't make sense. And when we go through those times, at times we, in the face of suffering and loss, we say, why me? But what Jerry Sitzer wrote about in that book and is that one day he had another question that struck him, and it was, why not me? I live in a fallen world, and evil and suffering is all a part of this world. And so in the face of suffering and loss, why not me? How can I assume that I am going to go through life and not have suffering? Am I a better person than the baby who's born to a starving family in Africa? How can I assume that I am exempt? And so he writes that he gradually realized that if he was going to weather the storm of loss in his life, the more important question is the next question we need to ask ourselves this morning as you and I face life and storms at times that will rock us. And that question is, how will I respond? How will I respond? When the storms of life hit, how are you and I supposed to respond to deep loss? Well, can I tell you that one of the things the Bible does not say to us is that when we go through the storm of life, then just simply pretend that it doesn't hurt. The Bible does not say for us to do that. And yet there's a lot of people who live life in this Western American culture that we live in that, you know, says to us, hey, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and soldier on. And that message is especially given to men. Don't show those emotions. And sometimes even the church promotes that. And somehow, you know, we sometimes promote and give credit to people for somehow just soldiering on through catastrophic times when things happen. Just take it in stride and act as though, you know, God's in control. Everything's good. When all the while inside we're struggling with that loss and we're grieving and we're feeling that pain. Oftentimes in our culture and in the church, we can play a kind of game. It's called a quiet game, right? I have a pastor who tells kind of a humorous story about the time when he was growing up. And he would say that he tells a story how his family would take long trips. And over the course of time, as they were on the trip, of course, kids ask always, what's the question that kids always ask when you get in the car after you've been driving for a little bit? Are we there yet? That's right. Are we there yet? And he would ask that, and his sister would ask that. And so his mother kind of came up with this idea, and she would say to them as they were on a trip like that, hey, I have a wonderful idea. Why don't we play the quiet game? And do you know how the quiet game is played? You just be quiet. You know? It's really a simple game. It's not complicated. Whoever's quiet the longest wins the game. It's a wonderful game, his mother would say. And he said when they were young, she got a lot of mileage out of that game. And he says, I'll never forget the day when we were driving along playing the quiet game, and the thought finally occurred to me, you know, I don't have to play this stupid game. He says, I was 17 years old when I realized that. No, actually, he wasn't 17. But you know, all too often in the Church of Jesus Christ, we encourage people sometimes to play the quiet game. Pretend like it doesn't hurt. Show that by our stoic silence. People ask you how you're doing, and what do you say? fine. I'm fine. And sometimes we try to escape pain in our life by being busy, watching TV, spending lots of money, burying ourselves in our work. Some people even escape it through addictive behaviors. And there are times when people in the church have this idea that somehow being a Christian means we go through our losses, including big losses, and we just kind of hydroplane over the suffering and over the pain. Can I tell you that there is one place this idea is not promoted, and that is it does not come from the Bible. I mean, think about it. What is one of the most popular books in all the Bible? The Book of Psalms. A collection of 150 songs and prayers to God. And some of them express praise, some of them express thanks. But do you know what the most common psalm is in the Book of Psalms? A psalm of lament. That's the number one most prolific psalm in the Book of Psalms, is the Psalms of Lament, where the psalmist will ask, "Why, God? How long, God? Where are you, God? It seems like you've hidden your face from me." Read through the Psalms sometime and see all the different Psalms where the psalmists express that. And yet what's interesting to me is you look at those Psalms that are Psalms of Lament or imprecatory Psalms where they're going through all kinds of struggles and trials and they're asking God, "How long and where are you, God? I don't understand, God." Yet at the end, what do they always say? "Yet I will trust you. Yet I will trust you. I may not understand why these things happen in this world, but yet I will trust you." And it's not just in the Psalms. I mean, there's another book in the Bible that is simply called Lamentations. Can I tell you, it's not a cheery little book? And yet the God of the Bible, the God of this universe, the God who we love and serve, is a God who is a very big God, and he is not, can I tell you, he is not threatened in the least by you expressing anger to him. He is not threatened in the least by you pouring out your hurt and your grief and your suffering and loss. Some of you have played the quiet game for too long. And there are losses maybe that you've never mourned or you've really just kind of stuffed down inside. Maybe there are tears you've never really shed that you need to shed. Maybe you need to stop running. Stop living our Johnson County culture, wearing the mask, saying everything is fine in the face of sadness and pain and suffering and loss. And to help you, maybe you need to go see a counselor and talk that out. Or maybe you get together with a friend or you get together with your small group and you get real in your small group and you take the masks off and you get real with each other. Maybe you check out a grief support group. There are grief share groups that are in churches around our community. It's a wonderful ministry. Maybe you take time this week, in this week of Thanksgiving, and you get alone with God. You go on a long walk, and you pour out your heart to him. And then instead of isolating yourself, you get with others, and you talk about what's going on in your life. And when somebody comes to us and talks with us about what's going on in their life, can I encourage us? Listen. Listen. Don't try to fix the problem. Just be present and listen. And maybe write a note or make a phone call. And at times follow up with them and ask them how they're doing. And when they tell you fine, don't let them walk away from you. But say, "Tell me more." Some of you here today maybe need to take the congregational care ministry training that we have if God has gifted you in that way. And you help come alongside in some more particular ways of people in the life of our church. Can I tell you that when we reach out to people and we come alongside them and it makes a difference in their life? Every now and then I will hear from people in this church who I visit who've been prayed for by people, who've received notes of care from people. They'll say to me, I got notes from people I didn't even know knew me. And they took time to write a note of encouragement to me. And they will never know how much that really meant to me. You see, the Apostle Paul puts it this way in Romans chapter 12, verse 15, this verse we see coming up on the screen behind me. Rejoice with those who rejoice, and weep with those who weep, or as some translations say, mourn with those who mourn. And look at the next verse from 2 Corinthians chapter 1. Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all of our troubles so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves have received from God. And you know, it's very interesting. The Bible does not tell us to give advice to those who mourn. To give advice to those who weep, it says, weep with those who weep. When my sister died in that plane crash with her oldest son, it was a crash where half the people on United Flight 232 that crashed in Sioux City, Iowa, survived that flight. And the story that we heard from people who were there that day is that she helped get the kids off, and then she went back in to try to get John out of his seat, but couldn't get him out because the fuselage had crushed in all around him. And in that moment, when the fire and the smoke rolled through that plane, she chose to stay there with him and to comfort him in their last moments. And her story in the years after that was a story that God used to lead many people to faith in Jesus Christ. And I would oftentimes have people come up to me and try to theologically explain all of that to me and talk about how wonderful it was that God had saved all these people as a result of her story. And can I tell you what my honest gut response was? Yes, that is wonderful. But God could have saved all those people without the death of my sister and her son. There are times we just don't understand why. And we may never understand why. And the scripture says, just simply weep with those who weep and comfort others in their trials and their troubles with the comfort that we have received from God. And so we go to people and we simply say, I care about you. And I don't understand it either, but I walk with you. I walk with you in the storm of loss. We oftentimes ask, why me? But the more important question is, how will we respond? And before we close, can I offer to us a takeaway, a challenge, an action step for us? And it really answers the question, how do you and I live in a world with the inevitability of loss? How do you and I live in a world with the inevitability of loss? How do you and I know I will have strength and hope in the storms of loss in our life? The only way I know is that we trust the Good Shepherd. We trust the Good Shepherd, like those psalmists who said, why, God? Where are you, God? How long, God? And God didn't answer. God seemed to be silent to them. And yet at the end of the Psalms, they would say, I will trust you, God. I will still trust you. In the Gospel of John chapter 10, verse 11, we see Jesus saying, I am the Good Shepherd. And the Good Shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. And in verse 14 of John 10, he says, I'm the good shepherd. I know my sheep and they know me. And what that's saying to us is that Jesus knows us. And so we can trust him. When we know him, we can trust him as the good shepherd. That is what will give us strength. That is what will give us hope in the storms of life. That is what will give us strength and what will give us hope in the storm of loss in life. In Psalm 23, there is Probably it's one of the most well-known of all the Psalms. And David, the shepherd boy, who one day is going to become king, talks about the Lord being our shepherd when we put our faith and we put our trust in him. These are familiar words. Let me read them to you. Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely your goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. He's bringing out that theme from Revelation 21. I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. I want to say a couple things about this psalm before I close. And one of the things I want to say is the psalm begins with those words, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. And when you and I in our Johnson County, Western American, culturalized look at that, we think that what that's saying is that, hey, it's a health and wealth gospel that we sometimes hear preached, right, on television by some television pastors. Hey, just trust in God and everything's going to be good. He'll give you health. He'll give you wealth. Can I say that is baloney? I could use another word, but I won't. We're in church. It's not what the shepherd psalm is talking about. It's not saying that when you and I trust God as our shepherd, that everything is going to be good, that life is always going to work out. And the reason we know that is because, you see, when David writes this psalm, and he uses that word green pastures in the culture in which he's writing it, he is not talking about belly-high alfalfa in which the sheep get to lie down in where everything is good and they have everything around them within reach. But rather what David is talking about is he's talking about shepherding in the Judean wilderness. And let's call up this picture. This is what it looks like. Does that look like green pastures to you? I mean, I look at this and I go, wow, what are they, rock-eating sheep? But what happens in that culture and in that region of the world and in David's day as well as today is that the western breezes would blow off the Mediterranean Sea at night. And at night, after a very hot desert climate kind of day, the moist air would hit the rocks and they would create water that would come down on the rocks. And overnight, little tufts of grass would appear from places. And so in the morning, before the sun would wilt that grass, the shepherds bring the goats and the sheep up along the hillsides and always need to bring the sheep and the goats up along the hillsides that are facing the Mediterranean, because if they take them on the other side where the moist air hasn't hit, they won't have as much of those little tufts of grass. And do you know what the Hebrew word is for those tufts of grass there? Do you know what the Arabic word is for those grass, tufts of grass there? Green pastures. Green pastures. The same Hebrew word that David uses here in Psalm 23. And what he's saying in this is that when you and I trust God in faith with our life, it doesn't mean that he's going to plunk us down in a life of belly-high alfalfa, where everything we have, we get that we need to live life and that life is going to be easy and that situations are always going to work out in the way that we want them to work out. You see, the reality is that you and I don't really know if we have, humanly speaking, what it's going to take to handle what might happen to us 10 minutes from now. Or what might happen to us tomorrow. Or what might happen to us next week or next month. None of us knows if we have what it takes to handle what life is going to throw at us at any given moment. But can I say to us that neither do the sheep in the Judean wilderness of the Middle East. And yet they're at peace. They're not worried. And why aren't they worried? Because they have the shepherd. They have a good shepherd. And so while you and I don't know, humanly speaking, if we have what it takes to face what we might face later today or tomorrow or next week or next year, we know that we can face it with hope and with peace and with trust when we have the Lord who is our shepherd. Because he will walk with us in the moments of the most extreme loss. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, the valley of death, as some of our translations say. And do you understand that the valley of death was a real valley? That's an actual location in Judea. And it was a location out in the wilderness where oftentimes shepherds would bring the sheep and the goats. And it was a narrow valley, and it was lots of rocks and lots of places where predators could hide. And he says, even though I walk through the valley of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod, your staff, they comfort me. The weapons of the shepherd that would guard and protect the sheep as they traveled through the valley of death. And then he says, as I face this battle, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. What is that saying? He's bringing out the image in that day that when enemies were defeated in battle, what they would do is they would have this feast and they would seat the enemies who had been defeated around the edge of that feast so that they would watch them. He's saying, you are preparing for me a banquet, a meal in the midst of my enemies. And surely, he says, your goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And so what about you and what about me? Are we trusting in Jesus as the good shepherd? Are we trusting in him in the midst of all the craziness that's going on in life today? All the craziness that's going on in our world today? Will we trust him and in him alone to be our hope, our strength, our peace in the midst of the fiercest storms of life? I mentioned John 16 earlier where Jesus says to his followers, that they're going to face some really hard times in life, some really big losses. He says, I've told you these things so that in me you have peace. He says, in this world you will have trouble, but take heart, you can have peace. Why? Those of you who know that text, why? I have overcome the world. Jesus, our good shepherd, has overcome sin and suffering and disease and death and loss. And if we will surrender our life to him, like the sheep in the Judean wilderness surrender their life to the shepherd, we can know that as we go through life, we can face whatever life throws at us. And rather than living life under the circumstances, we can be over the circumstances people, not because of any self-help stuff that's out there, because the Lord is our shepherd, and in him we put our trust.